Hello and welcome to Who Is She? A Bechdel Test First podcast. For each episode, we champion and discuss a pioneering woman in film who we think should be on your radar. I'm Beth Webb and I'm here today with my Bechdel Test First partners in crime. Hello to you, Karina.
Hello to you, Beth.
Hi, Steph Watts.
Hi, Beth.
And hi to Caitlin.
Hi, Beth.
Our subject today is Amy Simetz, an actress, writer, producer and director whose latest filmmaking venture, She Dies Tomorrow, is out now in the UK. She Dies Tomorrow is a timely tale of self-inflicted terror. When Amy, who is played by Caitlin Scheel, moves to a new home, she develops a fear that she will die the following day and passes her paranoia onto the people around her. We're going to play a quick clip from the film and then ask the big money question, who is she?
All right, let's do it.
Do I have to wear the helmet?
Yeah, definitely very important to wear the helmet. You know, these things look like big toys, but at the end of the day, if you hit anything too fast and too straight on, this thing can flip right the fuck over.
Well, I'm gonna die anyway.
I mean... Not here. I mean, not on my watch.
Right. But I'm definitely gonna die tomorrow.
That was a clip from the film, and this week I'm coming to you, Steph. So Steph, if I could ask you, Amy Simetz, who is she?
Yeah, so you might recognise Amy Simetz first and foremost as an actor. She's been in a lot of kind of horror-tinged movies like Your Next, Alien Covenant, The New Pet Sematary, and she's also been in kind of acclaimed TV series like Halt and Catch Fire, The Girlfriend Experience, and on The Girlfriend Experience, she's also a writer, producer, director. So she wrote and directed The Girlfriend Experience TV show. She'd also directed a couple of episodes of Atlanta. Beth, I know you're a massive fan of that. but she's also been doing that stuff like from the beginning. In her early days back in like 2008, she helped produce Barry Jenkins' first feature, Medicine for Melancholy. So she's kind of a triple threat. She's been doing that stuff for quite a long time. So yeah, multi-talented.
That's amazing. I didn't know that she worked with Barry Jenkins. That's so cool. She just gets cooler the more we learn. Now, before we take our usual deep dive into the weird and wonderful world of Amy Simetz, Caitlin had the absolute pleasure of speaking to her over in LA. She catches up with her now, and we'll see you on the other side.
This film, She Dies Tomorrow, is, I guess, kind of an abstract horror. And I was wondering how you came to this idea of, you know, being afraid of something unknown.
Well, I hate to break it to you, we all die. So it's not as abstract as you think. But the thing is that we don't know, you know, we don't know what happens in death, and death is a great unknown, and we don't know when it's happening. We don't know how it's happening. We don't know what happens when you die. We don't know any of these things. So to me, you know, the unknownness is one of the scariest things. And then in addition to that, I do love genre, and all genre is dealing with death or running from death or fear of death or, you know, trying to escape death or confronting death or any of these things. And they a lot of times put a face to what death is, like a monster or a ghost or, you know, or a super villain or, you know, home invasion or something like that. I felt like in order to deal with what I was trying to scratch at for personally for what I was going through, I needed to allow a mystery to be in the film of like a make a monster film where you don't actually see the monster.
How did the idea of that fear then being contagious kind of come into your thought process?
I knew that I wanted to make this film about Caitlin Scheel, who plays Amy. I knew I wanted for her to know that she was going to die tomorrow, and for it to be abstracted and to deal with other people not believing her, you know?
Yeah.
And I knew that, and we shot some of those scenes pretty early on, and we just found this exploration. But I was taking so much from my personal life and taking so much from sort of my experience, and not like in a literal fashion, just more in a emotional, trying to touch something visceral and trying to touch something that I couldn't really put into words. And I realized that this was I was dealing with my own anxiety and existential anxiety. And I realized at the time that I was making the movie, I was dealing with some stuff in my life that I was causing quite a bit of anxiety. And I would talk to my friends about it a lot, maybe a little too incessantly. And one of those friends being Jane Addams, who was in the movie as well. She's my dear friend. And then Caitlin Scheel as well. And the feeling that I had was, you know, it's great and they're wonderful friends, but when I would hang up the phone, I'd always be left by myself and then have a regret of like, did I just spread that anxiety to my friend? Was that necessary for me to do? And felt like I was passing off the burden, right? So that was on a personal level, that was sort of where the nugget of idea came from. And then also the 24-hour news cycle spreading. So like every 3 days, like a headline comes out, it's the end of the world. And then 3 days later, it's a new reason that it's the end of the world. And it's a new reason that democracy is dead. It's a new reason, you know, and watching everyone sort of like flip out about, you know, new pieces of information that we're spreading through the news. And I'm not saying that it's wrong. It's just every 3 days, it's like a new thing comes and then they forget about the thing that happened 3 days before, you know?
That's really interesting, actually, that you talk about feeling almost like a burden on your friends and that being the kind of source of this contagion. Because something I've been really interested in people's responses to the film that I've read and that I've spoken to people about is that actually we're taking quite a lot of comfort from this film and kind of enjoying this opportunity to actually speak about things that are actually quite hard to articulate. I don't know if you've thought anything about that response to the film as it being quite a comforting horror film.
Yeah, I mean, I think on two levels, for two levels that I thought about. One of them is there is a sick gratification if you've ever experienced something traumatic or loss or whatever, there is a sick gratification that like you can talk about it all you want, but you never feel like you can actually translate the what you're feeling to the other person 100%. So there's like a sick gratification of like, what if you could just download them with this feeling and they just get it, they just feel it immediately, you know, like and obviously with horrific consequences, but there is sort of a sick gratification of everyone being like, you're being crazy. And then suddenly they understand what you're going through, you know? And then, but in addition to that, I realized one day I kept like telling myself I was okay. You know, I was saying this out loud. And then I suddenly caught myself and I was like, you are saying out loud to yourself, you are okay. You are obviously not okay. Because if you were okay, you wouldn't be repetitively saying this like a crazy person out loud. It's okay that you're not okay, you know? And I feel like that's sort of what we're all feeling right now, which is like, it's okay. Like, cause there's something really strange about quarantine and coronavirus, you know, like obviously people deeply affected by it because they're losing loved ones. But if you haven't quite had, you know, coronavirus affect you in your close proximity, there's just like, you're just sort of battling with ideas, right? And so you're like, I'm okay. Like everything's kind of seems normal, even though I can't see my friends. But also I'm really scared. So like, am I okay or am I not okay? Is it okay to not be okay? Am I being paranoid? You know, like this, there's this battle that you're having with yourself. And in addition to that, like I found in quarantine that watching things that allow me to have this catharsis, whether that's crying or fear or, you know, or whatever, you know, that it's been a lot more helpful for me to like connect to and emotionally in a catharsis that like to heal internally, because initially I was trying to watch all this stuff that's very surface, like too hot to handle, you know, just to be like, I just need to pass the time and like until this, like until Corona is gone, you know. And then I felt like sick to my stomach after watching all that stuff. And I was like, this isn't helping at all. And then finally watched Ricky Gervais' Afterlife and cried hysterically and was like, oh my God, I needed that, you know? I needed for somebody to acknowledge pain, you know, and to laugh too, you know, to laugh along with it. But like, I needed somebody because we don't have these interactions like as frequently as we do with our lives when we're just like coming in contact with so many people and going through a normal day pre-corona, you know. You forget how many levels of emotions you're accessing when you interact with people, whether that's like frustration or, you know, injustice and, you know, all of these things that you kind of go through this spectrum of emotions all day long when you're interacting with people. So I feel like in quarantine, it's just like you're just sort of left with yourself, and you kind of need to exercise those emotions.
Speaking of TV shows, when you're working in television, as you have done, directing some episodes of Atlanta and writing and directing an adaptation of Steven Soderbergh's The Girlfriend Experience, are you looking for those kinds of emotions and that sort of visceral feeling as well from the work you're trying to produce in TV? And how did you kind of come to those projects?
I had never really thought about directing television at that point. And not necessarily because I didn't want to, it's just television's changed so much in like the past, God, 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. And so I hadn't really ever, prior to that point, I didn't think about directing television, even though I was acting in television, until Soderbergh asked me to direct The Girlfriend Experience. And I said, I don't know how to direct television, I've only acted in it. And he was like, I don't want you to know how to direct television. I want you to direct and write what you would do on an independent film. And so we did that. And we treated it like an independent, both Lodge Kerrigan and myself treated it like an independent film and wrote it. And he also said, don't worry about anything from the original movie. I just want to hear your take on what you would make based off the idea. Right. So we were allowed to do whatever we wanted. And then with Atlanta, I had to. Have you watched it? It's the best show on television. And I had never directed something that wasn't my own, but I loved that show so much. And I love Donald and Hero's brains so much. Yeah, that I was like, I have to try. Like I actually said in a Skype to them, I was like, listen, I might fail miserably. And they just like laughed, and they're like, that's how we feel when we're directing it. We just like try a bunch of stuff and like go weird and go deep, and like maybe it'll work, maybe it doesn't. And that's the magic of that show. And as soon as they said that to me, and I was like, I just want you to know, I might fail at this. I've never directed something that's not my own. They were like, that's why we want you. Like, we want you because you're not afraid to fail. You know, because we want to be pushing those boundaries. And so as soon as I like alleviated that, I was like excited about it. And they really allowed me the space to sort of make those episodes my own. But it was fun to fit into their world, because the world they created is so magnificent.
Yeah, definitely. And I think across Atlanta and The Girlfriend Experience and She Dies Tomorrow as well, and your previous feature, there are these ideas of, you know, there's a really clear visual language across those. And I wanted to sort of loop it back around to She Dies Tomorrow. It's quite a minimal aesthetic, but then you have these moments of really exaggerated colour that were almost like Suspiria or, you know, similar horror films. What was your approach to kind of building that that visual style?
There's a lot, but yes, I love Suspiria. I actually really love Dario Argento. There's something very fearless and strange about all of his movies. But uh, I with Jay Keitel, the cinematographer, he and I have known each other for a very long time. So like with this film in particular, it was, I really wanted to explore and push as far as we possibly could. And we were experimenting with like some of the visuals of like inside the body, and then trying to make it look like a universe, but also inside the, and like mysterious in these ways. And also with the lighting gag, Jay showed me this cool piece of equipment to put it into just really like normal terms. He showed me this, and there was something that both of us were like, there's something uniquely or something so simple about it that, but yet like overwhelming the effect, you know, that it was like, this just feels right. This feels like what death is like, there's a simplicity to death because it just happens. And it's as simple as like a heart stopping, but the immensity of it and the overwhelming effect of it is like beyond anything, right? So the simplicity of like this, the flashing lights and the simplicity of that, but also the overwhelming sort of like sensory that it gives you. And then in addition to that, having read things about near-death experiences of like the overwhelming lights and the sounds and hearing choruses and, you know, all these things that people like say that they had in near-death experiences, or hearing voices from the other side and the overwhelming vibration and like all of that, and the sound design and the visuals was what we were going for.
I just want to wrap up on some questions that we like to ask our guests for the podcast. So would you be able to name a woman in film working today who really excites you, and also any female focused films you would recommend to our listeners?
I have so many. Can I list them all?
Yes, please. Please do.
Okay, great. First off, Josephine Decker, who directed her new one, Shirley, is fantastic. Another, you know, like if you're thinking of like genre bending stuff, it's like, it is a drama, but she plays a lot with like anxiety and horror film, you know, and genre stuff in her work. And you should just watch all of her movies. If you watch Shirley or go backwards or forwards, doesn't matter. You watch Madeline, Butter on the Latch, and That Was So Lovely and Mild. She's just magnificent. She's a magnificent filmmaker. I really love Eliza Hittman's movies, Beach Rats and It Felt Like Love as well. Mm-hmm. And Chris Rea, who has a movie out, totally different genre. It's a romantic comedy. It's called I Used to Go Here, that's out right now. But if you can track down her other films too, Unexpected with Kobe Smulders, and she made this really beautiful film, Empire Builder, starring Caitlin Scheel, who's in my movie. And then Janixa Brava, who made this movie Lemon, who also directed in the first season a few episodes of Atlanta. She's an exciting filmmaker to me as well.
Now onto the film. This is a very interpretive film, I would say. Very ambiguous in places. Caitlin, what was your reading on it?
Yeah, I really, really like this film. I think there's something really refreshing about a sort of horror-tinged film that is, you know, acknowledging kind of fear and anxiety, but in quite abstract ways, as I mentioned in the interview. There's something, you know, really interesting about looking at fear as this sort of tangible and intangible thing. And I just think it's not something that you really see all that often, especially, you know, we're so accustomed to horror films being about a monster or a very clear and obvious threat and danger. And this, yeah, to hear somebody talk about, you know, being afraid of something unknown just feels very quite sort of, yeah, down to earth and just refreshing, and actually says a lot more about the human condition than some other horror films are doing today.
Definitely. Karina, what did you take away from this?
I think there was a really interesting and creative use of colours and space, and in these times, obviously, I mean, there's so many reviews that have talked about this being such a timely film in terms of anxiety and being in lockdown and making the most of your home, and how your home can both be your enemy and your comfort space all at once. And I think we obviously know that she didn't make this film for COVID, and it's just landed at this time, which has been contextually assimilated into these times. But it does work, and it does make sense. And I think my favourite part of this is the uses of colours and the different lightings as well. So I liked the opening of having this voyeuristic view through the half open doors, which is obviously a massive trope for horror films, but it takes it that one step further. It's much more, it felt quite young but fresh, not to make it sound, you know, I think that the word millennial always seems like a bit of a diss, but I don't mean it like that. But yeah, it's her use of light, her use of shadows, and the cinematography is very, very gorgeous, and she's definitely created that extra character through the use of that.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense of unknown that feels very tangible in the film.
Yeah, it adds a real texture. And I think a lot of that was in the performance as well. Just the way that she's rubbing up against the wallpaper, it's suddenly, you feel it yourself as you're watching. It's just like, yeah, I mean, I haven't rubbed myself up against wallpaper for a while, but I can I can imagine that being quite a sensorial experience.
Yeah, I think it's really fresh in the way that it's making those characters and viewers like confront their own mortality. I think that kind of her like just grasping for something real, like in her house, when you have that kind of moment of like considering death and what that means, and what that means for like your, what happens to your body or your mind, like where does it go type thing. I think that really struck me, like how effective she was in communicating that kind of realization and like what that does to your sense of self. And I think, yeah, all the kind of the colors, those like flashing red and blue lights whenever somebody kind of catches on to that thought that they're going to die in 24 hours really kind of gives you like this weird out of body experience almost. And yeah, I think like she does that really well in a really interesting way.
I think as well that the comparisons to, or the sort of idea that it's a really timely film and appropriate for COVID times is interesting, because even in my mind, even without this being the current situation, this film has a lot that just speaks to the way that we engage with news and media and you know, anxiety on social media and the way that people share ideas around, that it seems to me like it would have been timely anyway. There's something really interesting about it as a kind of parable for our times on the internet and consuming news and thought that way as well.
I think you're absolutely right, and especially it's what she says in her interview that really struck me, this idea of passing on that anxiety. And this, it's definitely, we are in a pandemic of anxiety, what with everybody's stress levels rising, because we're constantly checking ourselves up against other people who are constantly presenting themselves on different platforms. And that really struck me, that idea of like, oh, I want to share this with somebody because I'm supposed to, they're my friend, but then what if that infiltrates their psyche and I'm then making them feel really bad? And yeah, how you deal with that is interesting.
We've touched on this briefly, but I was wondering, Karina, if you had anything else to contribute on the aesthetic of the film.
I think it's very, and again, this is talking much to this accidental theme of being in isolation, and I think that comes from the aesthetic of being in the home. And I've not seen a film that has really made the best use of character within the home as this for a while. Although Baby Teeth as well, I thought did it very well. But this, making it feel very small, even though the house looked relatively comfortable, it made it look very small, very tight and suffocating. And this idea of it effectively being one long panic attack definitely comes out from being in this enclosed space where the air is being sucked out of you and you think you're going to die, which essentially is a panic attack. So, yeah, it's a very articulate, beautiful manifestation of what a panic attack actually feels like.
It actually kind of reminded me of The Invisible Man, which weirdly was the last film I saw before we went into lockdown. It's the last film I saw in the cinema. But just in terms of the use of kind of, yeah, that like the safe space, the home that's supposed to be your safe space, and then there's this kind of invisible force invading that space. And I guess like because that is definitely more of like a horror slasher type film than this is, but I think it definitely speaks to the use of those horror elements that Amy Simons is bringing into this film to convey those more kind of abstract themes.
Kaden, if I could ask you to speak a little on your thoughts of Amy as a filmmaker, not just in the realm of film, but also the TV shows that she's put out as well.
Yeah, I think the projects that she's taken on as a writer, director, and even as an actor, I guess, they all kind of speak to a similar idea about kind of engaging with the sort of the more interesting or twisted elements of our society and understanding human behavior. I mean, Atlanta's an amazing show, but it really does have these kind of dark, humorous, not horror elements necessarily, but there are those kinds of inflections throughout that show in lots of different ways. And really, it really engages with, you know, society on a kind of psychological level in lots of ways. And I think The Girlfriend Experience was another example of that. And her, I think, as we've been talking about her kind of aesthetic in She Dies Tomorrow. And I think she's a filmmaker who's great at giving her films their own kind of visual language. With her previous feature, Sun Don't Shine, it has this really amazing kind of grimy Florida aesthetic that's quite similar to Kelly Reichardt's Rivers of Grass, if anyone's seen that. And it's kind of similar to She Dies Tomorrow in that the protagonist is this really kind of brazen, very distinctly individual character who's kind of running from a life that she doesn't want, or running from a situation that has caused her kind of trauma and pain. And the way that the landscape and the sort of heat and the sweat and the dirt of this environment is used to sort of deliver that story of paranoia and fear is just really, really engaging. I mean, it's shot on film as well, so it's just really beautiful, even in its kind of grit and grime. So yeah, I just think she's working on projects that seem to really speak to her interests and her curiosity about the world, and she's able to put this sort of this visual language into action for each of them in such a distinct and interesting way.
I didn't know she shot on film. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, she has another short film as well, which is called something like A Day in Miami or something about Miami. She's from Florida originally, which is how she met Barry Jenkins, actually, because they both went to the university there. And yeah, so that's that. She's really, yeah, her film work is quite special.
Oh, it'd be so cool to watch it on a big screen, on an actual projector. So yeah, these times not quite permitting that right now, but yeah, hopefully.
And then Steph, so we've obviously examined what this film is as a psychological horror. How do you think that Amy as a filmmaker contributes to this genre?
Well, I think it's really interesting that she mentioned Josephine Decker in the interview, because way back at the start of our podcast, when we were talking about Josephine Decker, we were talking about this kind of like, does work have to be accessible and easy to understand for it to be kind of successful? And I think her and Josephine Decker are really linked in that way of kind of portraying something that's really personal and actually kind of quite a universal feeling, like that feeling of kind of contagion of anxiety and mortality and stuff like that, but it's done in a way that maybe takes a bit more unpicking. So I think it's really exciting to see her do that kind of work, and it's obviously like horror is a big genre for women filmmakers, and there's a lot of kind of writing out there about kind of women in horror, and but yeah, to kind of see this in this more kind of abstract way and in a way that you can take a lot of interpretations from it. And I know a lot of the discussion around this film has been people taking their own kind of personal interpretations of what the film means and what it's about. That is something that's really special about this film and kind of adding to that genre.
I think it's something that we touched on recently as well in our makeup episode, talking about Claire Oakley as a filmmaker and how, Steph says, you know, women in horror is quite an interesting subject because it's often sort of a vehicle for directors to work through personal feelings or experiences. And I think Amy Simons is a filmmaker who's doing that as well. And you know, going back to this idea of using quite an intangible fear or an abstract fear as the subject of this, I think just really broadens kind of the horizons of women in horror even further, and really kind of, you know, blows open the playing field in terms of what stories you can tell using that genre and using those styles. It doesn't have to be straightforward. It doesn't have to be with a clear-cut answer or a clear-cut explanation of what's going on. It really is just about the way that you use film and cinema to unpack an experience or a feeling in the way that feels right for you as a filmmaker.
Because it's not, I mean, I think it's a bit of a disservice to say this is an out-and-out horror. Because if you say horror, I mean, I must admit, I started watching it without realising what exactly it was about. And then I think somebody had mentioned, oh, it's a horror. And then suddenly, instantly, I had this new relationship with it because my relationship with horror isn't great. I was just like, oh, I'm going to be a bit scared. But actually, it's very psychological. It's very textured in the way that it makes you feel connected with your own emotions and your feelings. Exactly what you're saying, like channeling the manifestation of these very ambiguous, amorphous feelings that you have. And yeah, especially right now, everyone's feeling very tense. And I don't know whether these are women's feelings. I don't know if this would a man have the same? I mean, I don't want to be too binary about it either, but yeah, I guess I'm just wondering how feminine this film is to us.
I think there's interesting things to sort of think about in terms of maybe not necessarily feminine, but collaborative work and ideas of friendship and the way that, the way that Amy Simons is a filmmaker who kind of frequently collaborates with the same people, and they're people who are her friends in real life. And it's sort of, as she mentions in the interview, talking about offloading those feelings onto friends, and then being able to bring that into her cinema. And she's worked with Caitlin Scheel a lot. And I think their collaboration is what brings the best out of this film, because there's a kind of shorthand between director and actor. And it seems like, yeah, it's perhaps there is something feminine about that in their friendship. But it to me seems like a mode of filmmaking that is just very focused on collaboration and kind of personal relationships within its kind of structure.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Who Is She? A Bechdel Test Fest podcast. She Dies Tomorrow is available to stream and is on digital download now. Join us for our next episode in a few weeks' time, where we'll be talking to the filmmakers behind British coming-of-age film Rocks. Who Is She? A Bechdel Test Fest podcast is a Bechdel Test Fest production. It was hosted by myself, Beth Webb, and produced by Steph Watts, with additional help from Karina Antrobus and Caitlin Quinlan. Our music was written, performed, and produced by Zoe Meads. Check out her band Wildest on all major streaming platforms.